I'm Brian McCreath from WCRB, and I'm at the Shaolin Lu Performance Center in Rockport with Paul Laraya, the violist who is featured on a Rockport Chamber Music Festival concert. Paul, thank you for taking a few minutes to talk with me today. I appreciate it.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
So you've just finished rehearsal, and so you have a sense of this hall. I know you've been in this hall before with a different ensemble, but maybe that was a little while ago. What's your sense of this hall now coming back here, especially as, you know, the featured centerpiece soloist of this concert?
Well, the hall is just so beautiful, not only visually, but acoustically. It's a really excellent hall to play viola in particular, because the size is not too sort of scary, and it's not something you have to feel like you have to overly project in. It's, you get an immediate response. I don't know if you can hear it now, but it's just a lovely space to feel the music in, and also, but it still retains an element of intimacy with the audience, which is really, I think violists especially appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the viola having that ability to soar when it needs to, but really have some deep resonance, seems like you would have a way as a violist of maybe even experiencing more aspects of this hall than some other instrumentalists would.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's perfectly true. I mean, a lot of our colors are in the sort of, like people like to say, the human voice range. And it's kind of like I'm able to have a dialogue with the hall. The sound comes right back, and it fills, sometimes if you want to use a certain, get into the string, you just fill the hall up with this sort of more smoky kind of sound, but then you can also focus the sound and project it. It's absolutely lovely, not to mention the view.
The view is spectacular as well. That's true. We'll get into the specifics of the program in a bit, but this program does sort of begin with just two instruments and progresses adding sort of instruments as you go, or adding resonance. And so I guess that changes your experience of the sound in the hall as well.
Yes, I would like to think so. And besides that, there's sort of a little bit of trajectory in terms of the complexity of the music. I shouldn't say complexity, but sort of in this sort of intensity of the music, I think is a better way of saying it. Starting with the Mozart is certainly a really super complex and genius piece, the way that he's able to play just two single voices off of each other in sort of almost in contest with each other, but then also in unison. It's just like a beautiful like ballet dance or something.
And is that Mozart, this is one of the duos that he wrote, basically for Michael Haydn. That's kind of the funny part of the story behind it, that he was stepping in for Michael Haydn to complete something when Haydn was sick or hungover or some such thing. But is this music something that you kind of have under your fingers all the time? Is this pretty much straight ahead viola material that you could pull up when you need to almost any time?
In a way it is, because, well, you know, we don't have, I mean, Mozart really loved the viola, and he was the violist in his string quartet when he used to play string quartets with Papa Haydn, and I believe with Boccherini or Dittersdorf, and he always gives the viola the best parts. And because we don't have solo sonatas in our repertoire, we only really have the one Sinfonia Concertante as our concerto vehicle, I would say this is one of our greatest chances to like play the master of Mozart and in his unique voice that he gives to the viola. So in a way, yes, I would say even if I don't always perform this piece, I do always read it with friends. It's a kind of like one of those pieces that you enjoy all the time.
Sort of symbolic of Mozart's own friendship with Michael Haydn, yeah. I guess, then, yeah. So then the Dvorak miniatures that you're doing. We should say at this point, you inherited this program, basically.
Exactly.
So tell me about that and what it was like to get this call and say, look, we've got this program and our original artist can't make it, but we know you're a great violist. Can you take this on? Was there any part of this program that made you stop and wonder? I know you did replace the one piece, but other than that, did you sort of have to give a little bit more thought to one thing or another about the program and whether you wanted to do that?
Well, I would say Mozart would be the one thing that like automatically on my list, because it is such pristine music. I was immediately hit the practice room right away. But the Dvorak, I've been thinking about that piece a little bit lately, even before I got the call from Barry, because I was thinking about programming a version where the viola takes a lot of the melodic material, because I'll be playing a Wigmore Hall recital in February as a prize for a competition that I did a couple months ago. And so I've sort of been like listening to recordings, and so it was really kind of funny coincidence that I was asked to play this piece, and the viola part kind of takes on the role of the cello in this one. So that's a fun role to play.
and what is the sort of character of these pieces? I guess Dvorak kind of wrote them thinking of them more as chamber music, again, among friends. So tell me a little bit more about what the audience experiences when they hear these pieces for three instruments.
Well, it's the best way I can put it is that they're just extremely charming. They just go right to your heart. They're the kind of music that just doesn't have any pretense, and it's just song, you know, song at its best, almost like Schubert, but this is Dvorak's version of song in its most simple and beautiful form.
You decided instead of Prokofiev to do the Brook Romance, and what is it about that piece that made you think, okay, I'll do this concert, but I really want to do this Brook rather than the Prokofiev? What is it? What are the qualities of the Brook that you really wanted to bring to the stage here?
Right. Well, the Brook is just a fabulous piece, and it kind of helps that I've played this one a lot. Like, I've played this one with I've soloed with many orchestras with this piece. And so I kind of know the piece in its original context, which is as sort of a concerto. It's in the similar romance style to the Beethoven romances for violin. But I've also played it in recital, and just the intimacy that you can get out of it when you're playing with piano. And I'm really, really fortunate to be playing with Kevin, who's a phenomenal chamber musician. I think we're going to have a really good time tonight, bringing out all the little colors and nuances that you kind of have to like overly project when you're playing it in a big hall. That you're going to hear a lot of, hopefully you'll be hearing a lot of soft, special colors from us tonight. And it's just that sort of high romantic era music that we violists don't have a huge wealth of repertoire in. And this is our piece for that. And I hope that people will love it as much as I do.
Excellent. The Brahms string quintet that you're doing, I wonder if it's a sort of common experience as a violist to sort of be that person that steps in with a quartet, a preformed quartet, as you're doing with the Azzurri Quartet on this performance. And what this is, what this piece demands of you in terms of chemistry. I mean, I think there probably are a lot of situations like this where you've got to lock into a group that's already pretty locked in. Tell me about that.
Yeah, exactly. And sort of the role of a concert violist these days is definitely that of jumping into these great masterworks on festivals and such. And a couple months ago, I jumped in for a Mendelssohn octet, which you really have to be fitting in really well, because when the number goes to 8, it can be kind of cacophonous. If everybody's trying to do their own, play their own version of musicality, you know, you have to be really humble in that situation. And I'm lucky that I play in a string quartet also full-time, the Catalyst Quartet. And so normally I would be playing the first viola part on this, but I'm joining in with my friends on the second viola part. And what's really cool about that is that it is very much like a quartet viola part, in that it's very, very much in the part of the tech. It's in the textures. It's right up in there. Like, I feel like I have a lot of dialogue with the cello, just like I would if I was playing in the string quartet, and a lot of dialogue with the second violin. And it's really nice to play with a preformed quartet. And the Azzurri Quartet are phenomenal musicians. And I'm feeling really good about this one. I'm feeling like the rehearsals were great, and we're going to make Brahms proud on this one.
Excellent. That's good to hear. Well, you've referenced a few times here as we've talked some aspects of your life as a concert violist. You've mentioned the repertoire. I don't know if you prefer to think of it as limitations, but certainly the repertoire is a different landscape from violinists or even cellists. And you've referenced the idea that you're often sort of stepping into these situations, as we just discussed with the Brahms. Tell me about your sort of trajectory and when it became clear to you you wanted to pursue this path of concert violist. It's not something that a lot of people can really pull off, apparently, judging by the number of people who yeah. we think of doing this. What is it that sort of spurred you into this pursuit that you're doing?
Well, I think I would have to give the credit to my teacher at the New England Conservatory, who was the amazing Kim Kaskashian. And she was just such an inspiration on what it means to play music. I think I kind of accidentally stumbled on this path of to be a concert violist is not the same as to be, you know, a solo concert violinist, which means like, you know, like I'm playing with concertos all the time. What it basically means to me, at least, is that I don't want any limitations on the repertoire or on the situations in which I'm playing. And I want every note that comes out of my viola to be on purpose and with integrity. And so it's kind of just the path has kind of opened up in that way. I wouldn't say I didn't necessarily do it on purpose. It's just sort of a byproduct of trying to do the most at the highest level.
Yeah, sure. And I guess that the so-called limitation, I'll go back to that word, may lead you into some creative paths that the more, let's say, the violin, cello especially, or the wind instruments that are really popular, that they may not end up finding because they're so often just pursuing the next concerto that they've got to get into the repertoire. What are some of the more creative ways that you've found to be surprising in the last few years? What paths have opened up that you didn't really expect?
Well, for one thing, in my quartet, we actually have, in a way, we have won a Grammy because we've played on an album with the fantastic, sensational jazz vocalist Cecile McLaren-Salvant. And we're very fortunate to collaborate with her on her album Dreams and Daggers. And I would say that's sort of the most unique and but still fulfilling musical endeavor I've had in my recent memory. Also, did some collaborations with dance at the highest level at the Vail International Dance Festival. I even played a Stravinsky solo piece, the Elegy, which Balanchine actually made a stunning choreography to, with just one single ballerina. And I was on stage with a dramatic spotlight. So I would say it's safe to say that viola does take you to those kind of places.
Yeah, yeah. No, those sound amazing. I don't know this Elegy that you're referencing.
So,
I would love to see that that dance. But yeah, I mean, if you are a concert violinist and you've like, okay, I've knocked off the Tchaikovsky and the Brahms and a couple of the Mozarts or whatever, you may only be pointing that direction. And these things come up in your life because of the variety. But here's what I want to ask you. If you get a call from an orchestra, or when you get a call, because I'm sure you do get calls from orchestras, what's the concerto you want to suggest first? What's the viola concerto or viola feature piece that you say, look, I want to do this?
Yeah. The one that feels the best to me is the Bartok concerto.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just, it doesn't have any balance issues. It's just a really fun piece to play. I have it in my fingers and it's just, I mean, and Bartok happens to be my favorite composer. And that's a very violist thing to say, but I wouldn't say he's my favorite composer because of the viola concerto. Because actually, his piano concertos and his violin concertos are, in my opinion, a little bit better. But I absolutely love his orchestral stuff. I love his operas. I love particularly his string quartets are just some of the genius of the 20th century.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the Bartok Viola Concerto is frankly one of my favorite concertos too. And I'm not a viola player, by the way. I just love the concerto. I think it's a really, really cool, interesting piece.
Yeah, and it has a very unique character to it. And it has this like melancholy, bittersweet, but somehow it still has rapture. It's like this, it's a rapturous, and I mean, it was his swan song too. So it's combining all those elements. If you can get into that, then it's extra fun to play.
Oh, that's great. Well, we'll look forward to that sometime in the future. But for now, this chamber music concert will be an amazing thing. So, and I'm glad you mentioned Kim. She's one of our favorite people here in the Boston area. She's just a wonderful, wonderful person, an unbelievable asset for our area. So I'm glad that you were able to work with her and that set you on this path. Paul Araya, thanks so much for spending a little bit of time talking with me today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.